9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have ignition. We have liftoff. Out and about is a go. All systems are nominal. Well, good afternoon, out and abouters. Hope everybody's doing good. It's a beautiful day out there. You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 and or 92.3 FM, or perhaps streaming. You're streaming from KYRS.org. I have in the studio with me today, folks from Splat. I have Nanette Cloud. And of course, my friend Alana Shepherd. How are you guys? How's it going?
So good.
Hi.
So
good.
Hi.
Good to see you. I want to before we get started talking about Splat, which I'm really excited to talk about, I've been wanting to start doing this where I let people know, because people have been complaining there's no way of knowing what's going on as far as like protest stuff. Why don't they have another No Kings? Well, there's stuff going on every week. So I was going to let people know that on Mondays, you can go to protest Representative Michael Baumgartner by meeting at the V median on the division in front of Wendy's, and that's at 3 o'clock on Mondays. Wednesdays, there's protests going on at the ICE office from 1 to 3 at 411 West Cataldo. Thursday, there's the Visibility Brigade, and you might have seen them over I-90. They hold the cool signs, very, very fun to look at. That's from 3:30 to 4:30 p.m. That's at the I-90 overpasses at Sherman, Arthur, Thor, and Regal. And also on Thursday, there's the Spokane Walk for Peace, and that's going to honor and celebrate the 2,300 miles that the Tibetan monks have walked from Texas to Washington, D.C. by Buddhist monks and their loyal dog, Aloka. And that is going to be February 12th, so that's the day after tomorrow. Down at the fountain at Riverfront Park, and that's going to be a walk on the sidewalks or downtown. You're encouraged to bring flowers and flashlights. I don't know why flashlights, but I guess there's alliteration there, so let's do it. And then on Saturday from 2 to 4 every Saturday, it's Say It Saturday at B.A. Clark Park there on Division and Garland. And that's from 2 to 4. So those are the things going on. And you can also, if you want to know what's going on, you can go to Spokane Indivisible. You can on Facebook, you can also follow Spokane Stands Up. That's the Facebook page that has all those listings. Whew, okay, I feel like I just did a big commercial, which I didn't, because this is not commercial radio. Welcome to Splat.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hi.
Okay, so What is Splat, you guys? I mean, I've seen it on Instagram. It's a little bit mysterious. It's beautiful colors. It makes me happy when I see the artwork. But what is it?
Yeah, Splat is a collective of local artists who specialize in print and other sorts of reproducible media, in particular zines. We have other things in our shop as well. We are working towards becoming a cooperative. Currently, we are technically a subsidiary of the Blue Door Theater. They are the people who are letting us use their space and being very generous with a super, super cheap, good rent to enable us to do our thing. And we are working towards becoming a proper, legal, independent cooperative over the course of the next year. In the meantime, we are operating under cooperative principles, trying to make sure that we are as democratic and community-based as possible.
Okay, so when you say a co-op or cooperative, does that mean that there would be members who would say, oh, I'm part of the cooperative, I pay $20 a month or whatever to be a part of the cooperative, but that would that open up some art space to create?
Not at all, actually. We do not ask for anything specifically from any of the people who are working with us, other than that they work together and help us make a really cool thing exist okay. in town. So there's no like monthly fee or member dues or anything like that. The key thing about a cooperative in my mind is that all of the labor is democratically and community driven in like what it is we do and what it is and how we do it. And most importantly, that all of that labor is equitably supported, which in our case means everyone gets a split of all the income that we make. You know, we pay out in sort of percentages of the income, depending on what people do and how they are, how they're working with us and whatnot. But yeah.
Is there space in there to create as far as like to make things?
Yeah. So there's okay. the main shop is just the main milk bottle space. So okay. it's just, we're just kind of crammed into that bottle bursting at the seams, but behind further back is the Blue Door Theater. And, it is definitely a usable third space. We're going to be working to make it more cozy. There's also the Yes and Art Gallery in that space. Where people can enjoy and potentially, you know, purchase and fund local arts through that. And then there's also the two main theater spaces of Blue Door. One is sort of a proper modern theater space for primarily improv comedy. And then there's also a black box theater space, which is for more other things, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not really a theater person. Mary Stewart, the crew doing that. On 2 weeks ago, I think it was. Now, Alana, you used to run a theater. So is this sort of, you know, it's kind of an interesting sort of transition into this space.
Yeah, it has been a bit. My involvement is through Nanette. And I do all the boring stuff.
It's not boring. It's important.
Well, it is important, mm-hmm. but it's not as flashy or as exciting as creating comics or prints or anything like that. So I do things like develop the website and work on contracts and write grants and things like that.
So stuff that really, that kind of skill set when you're at stage left that really comes in handy.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. So now zines, now people, I'm really into zines. In fact, one of my favorite books is What Do You Mean, What's a Zine?
Oh, classic.
That's
classic
a great zine. Book. But for our listeners out there, they may not be familiar with what a zine is. Could you kind of tell them?
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of ways to define what a zine is, and it is an argument as old as time of what counts as a zine and what doesn't. My definition is that a zine is a independently produced and distributed manuscript. They tend to come in the form of little desktop printed booklets, usually containing art or poetry or, you know, advice and guides and helpful information. You know, there's a long history of them being used by radical movements of all sorts.
Thomas Paine's Common Sense was a zine.
I mean, yeah, if we go back far, they wouldn't have used that word, but we could definitely go back and say that zines are as old as the printing press.
Yeah.
They really had their heyday sort of in like the punk culture of the 80s and 90s. We get the word zine from specifically fanzines of like the early 40s and 50s. Some of the oldest surviving zines that we have access to are like Kirk and Spock romantic erotic fan fiction.
Yeah, I had some Star Trek zines as a kid. Yeah.
And then fanzines, of course, got their word from magazines. And now we just call them zines.
Yeah.
There's a lot to them, both from like a cultural side of things and also the practical craft making side of things, and just like the type of content and media that can be distributed through a zine is so diverse because the people who make them are so diverse, and the access to the barrier to entry of making a zine is having a piece of paper and a pen, right? And then if you want to make copies, some sort of printing method, which nowadays is very accessible through places like the library or wherever.
Yeah, you know? Printers. I mean, what a gift that we can all pick up a printer for cheap and just go to town. I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. So you would have somebody maybe write up the zine, maybe hand ink the whole thing. And if it's a, like, say a comic, they might draw illustrations in there, then print it out, and then they would be able to sell it in your shop there?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Basically, we work as a consignment shop. So local artists and creators who make zines or prints or whatever can come to our store and put in a consignment application online to tell us who they are and whatnot. And then we would go and select what stuff we want to carry. And the basics of the deal is that they get 60% of everything we sell. And then the other 40% is distributed. 20% goes to Blue Door Theater as our rent. And I could get into the details.
We don't need to go into all the
I could get very into the details, but it's
very
numbers.
Complicated. Right.
But all to say, if somebody is interested, I mean, you know, you have something to say. And I think I like zines because it's not social media. Mm-hmm. It's kind of neat. You get to say your piece. If people don't like what you say, they can tear up your zine, I guess, or write their own zine, you know, but that's what I really like about it. Do you ever have things where, let's say somebody does like, writes it out by hand and then maybe does cartoons on there or whatever. And then later and then prints them out, but then comes back later with say like a linoleum, cut and then go ahead and print those on there too. Is that happening?
I've definitely seen zines like that. Yeah. I don't think we have any zines like that in our space yet, but if someone is out there listening and wants to make a zine like that or has a zine like that and wants to give it to us to sell, we would definitely be interested.
Yeah.
There's so many different approaches to making zines and so many different formats of zines. The way that most people probably have encountered zines are like the little one sheet. A student of mine gave me a really good word for them. Penny booklets, penny journals.
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh. And it's just sort of one zine sort of folded up in an origami style. And it gives you like 8 pages to work with.
Yeah.
And it's just like folded out of one single sheet of paper. And, I love that format. It is, the perfect mix of like, you know, creative constraints, but also like accessibility. You can just make them. They're so good. Right.
Right. And do you have, so I was kind of, you know, haunting your website a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it looks like, do you do mostly like linoleum cutting for your prints there? Or, sounds like maybe some silk screening too.
We do have 2 artists who are heavily involved, Ryan and Basil, who do a lot of silk screening and linoleum cut printing. Yeah. The printing that we do in the shop is mostly like digital desktop printing,
okay,
you know,
gotcha.
Regular inkjet machine. Well, not regular. They're fancy inkjets, but they're inkjets.
Yeah.
They're inkjets. It's the type of thing that anyone could have access to.
Yeah.
Ours are modified slightly. Like one of them I have like taken apart and put back together several times to get it working again. It's my baby and I love it.
Yeah.
But they're just regular CMYK inkjets for the most part. There's so much power and potential in a printer if you know how to treat it right.
I love to do linoleum prints.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love doing that. That's a blast. I used to, when I was the captain of a fire station, I would, for my New Year's presents for all the crews, I would make commemorative linoleum cut prints. And then hand ink them, you know. I like doing
that
too.
Yeah,
print them and then go back and touch them up with some.
That's a classic method that, I mean, goes even back further than the printing press, right?
Yeah, woodcuts.
Woodcuts and whatnot.
And linoleum, there's something really, it feels really good.
Yeah, that nice rubbery texture that you carve out.
It feels really nice.
Yeah, we definitely love that side of printmaking. Something that I was careful was I wanted to make sure that Splat really filled a niche in the Spokane arts community. and, you know, did things that wasn't currently being done in the community. Because
you've got like the Spokane.
The Spokane Print and Publishing Center exists, and they are so wonderfully decked out for doing traditional printmaking. You know, Amy and Dorian are wonderful people. Big shout out to Spokane Print and Publishing Center for all of your traditional printmaking needs. The printing that we do in the space is a lot more, you know, straightforward and modern.
Right.
The zines that we make and distribute there come in all sorts of shapes and sizes. I have all sorts of different methodologies made for them. You know, there's collage, there's poetry, there's comics, everything.
Oh, yeah. Right? Very cool.
Yeah,
very cool.
We just love print and reproducible media. We have one artist, Ben Hoteling, I think is how his name is pronounced. It's either that or it's Hoteling. Ben is awesome. They make these really cool resin cast figures. So they'll make like models out of clay, and then they'll make a mold, and then they make resin cast figures. And that sort of stretches the boundaries of what we offer in the store. But like, it's reproducible artist made media, and it's super cool. And we're so excited to have it.
Oh boy. Okay. I'm really excited about this. And we'll talk a lot off mic about this.
Oh,
you've hit my sweet spot here. We have to break for our 20 minute after the hour stuff. Before we do, I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. And this is really a terrible question that none of my readers or listeners care about, but I've been trying to do some work on with making zines and other printed material out of newsprint.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not found a suitable way to print newsprint on a printer. Have you ever done that?
I've not done newsprint. I have done some like other delicate papers through an inkjet printer. What you'd want to do is you'd want to backfeed it, because if you're doing it from the under tray, what happens is the paper gets sort of sucked up by these rollers and wrapped around, and then you probably run into like jamming problems, right? So what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to set that paper in through the backfeeder.
Okay.
If your printer has a backfeeder.
Yeah.
Because that way it doesn't get like bent around rollers, right? You'll probably also want to set your print quality to draft so that it's putting less ink on the paper.
Yeah, because it's so absorbent, that paper.
Yeah, it's so absorbent. It will just soak it all up. I think hypothetically, you might want to, instead of using a Xerox, instead of using an inkjet, you would probably want to use something like a Xerox printer or maybe even a laser printer.
Yeah.
I'm less familiar with lasers.
Because that's like a powder or something.
Xerox is like a powder that's like heat transferred, I think, basically onto the page. And so it wouldn't like get soaked up by the delicate newsprint paper.
Yeah. See, these are the things I wake up in the morning thinking about.
Yeah.
It's just like,
oh, me too.
It's just terrible.
I'm a huge nerd about
trying to like figure out these problems.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. I'm going to play a little music while I load up my computer. We'll load up my computer and I'll play all my underwriter ads. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody, please stay tuned for that. You'll love it. And we'll play some music.
The man who's had expanded was corrupted. into poison. It was no matter of small consequence, no little pub incidents. A red-faced, false, jolly grapes had steal his jewels and put them in the mouths of bit actor fools. Of this, he was convinced. Sounds like hip-hop, huh? Sounds like a lot of hip-hop, huh? Over, over. Over, over. The miles had expanded. The man has had expanded. Someone appear, a literate, crack, crack.
Support for Out and About comes from Breathing Room, an in-person workshop with Michael Mullen Skelton, March 6th through 8th at the Women's Club of Spokane. The workshop includes guided practices using conscious breath and movement. More information is available online at movements-matter.com or by phone at 509-499-3750.
Out and About receives support from Eastern Washington University, the region's polytechnic, offering an increased emphasis on real-world, hands-on learning to build career-ready skills and a lifelong community. More information at ewu.edu.
Out and About receives support from Boots Bakery and Lounge, specializing in vegan bistro fare and gluten-free baked goods. Located in the Saranac Commons, 19 West Main Street in Spokane. Open 7 a.m. through 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. through 5 p.m. Sundays. Full menu and information at bootsbakery.com.
This is your KYRS live and local calendar for February 13th through the 15th. Friday, Haywire at the Grain Shed, Paul Sandberg at Arborcrest, Gabe Lapano at Churchill's, Just Plain Darren at the Riddler, Corey Aileen at AK Asian, Robert Vaughn at Helix Wines, 32 Flavors at the Bullhead, The Elevators, Shwayze, and Jarve at the Knitting Factory, the Jared Hall Quartet featuring Tal Cohen at Hamilton Studio, Scott Ryan Ingersoll and On Call Cowboys at Zola, and I Absorb Your Static, Lazarus, Loomer, and Skin Slicing Horse at the Big Dipper. Saturday, Corey Aileen at River Park Square, Victor Byrne at Northtown Mall, Paul Flores at No Live Brew House, the Spokane Symphony at the Fox, Bruiser at Fizzy Mulligan's, the Hot Club of Spokane at Hotel Indigo, Blake Braley and the Lover Boys at the Chameleon, Hayes Carl and Ryan Montblow at the District, and Dr. CC and the Elixir and Ben True at Zola. Sunday, Just Plain Darren at the South Hill Grill. For an entire hour of local musicians, tune into Sounds of Spokane every Sunday night at 8 on KYRS.
Independent media is more important than ever. In a world where local stations are being gobbled up by corporations and religious programming, community stations like KYRS are rare and precious. Support independent media by donating at kyrs.org.
All right, we're back. Thanks for sitting through all those people out there. And of course, you're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane. And I am talking to my friends from Splat Co-op, which is a really cool place where you can get handmade things from local artists, basically zines. There's decals, right?
You got stickers, yeah. Prints, yeah.
Yeah. Stickers and
patches,
buttons.
Patches, buttons, yeah.
So patches, so that'd be like something you could sew on or something?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, patches that you would sew on to like your jacket or your hat or whatever.
How cool.
We've got like upcycled clothing with like patches and prints on them as well. And as we were talking before the break, cool resin cast toys.
Yeah.
And it's all done by people that you could run into at a coffee shop here in town.
Or out here in the third floor of the library.
Exactly.
When you guys walked up, it was like celebrities. You guys were just accosted by people working here, people, people just in the library.
Yeah, Alana and I, we both have done a lot of work in the community over the last couple of years, and Splat has really been a culmination of that. It's been a lot of calling in favors and a lot of asking people to trust us and being a lot of people coming in to help, you know?
Yeah. Well, why don't we tell people how they can find out more about Splat?
Yeah.
Okay. So we have a website, splatspokane.org. There's also our Instagram, which is Splat_co-op. Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And our Blue Sky, which is splatspokane.org as well. And what else?
We have a place that you can come visit to in real life. We are...
Oh, that little thing.
Yeah. We are located in the downtown Milk Bottle on 319 South Cedar Street, front door of the Blue Door Theater. And it's a giant milk bottle. You can't miss it.
And what day are you guys open?
Yeah, we are open Thursday through Sunday, 2 to 9 p.m.
Okay, those are great hours.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you probably, do you get people coming in after shows and stuff to look around a little bit?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, we tried to make sure that we were open while Blue Door was doing things for lots of reasons, but also just because it's fun.
Yeah.
A lot of us weirdo local artist types don't like being up before noon. So, it was really a wonderful win-win situation for the both of us.
Yeah.
I take care of all the before noon stuff.
Uh-huh.
I find myself, I'm one of those people that go to bed like at 9. If I ever have a rehearsal, for a play or something, it just kills me. I have to stay up to like 9 o'clock, just so hard.
I just don't sleep.
Well, that's good.
Oh, you sleep.
That's good.
Sleep. I sleep a little bit.
When you're on during shows, I guess not as much.
Well, I just don't sleep much. I sleep about half as much as you do.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Well, how did this whole idea come about? I mean, this is a really interesting foray in an interesting place. It seems like a lot of really cool things came together to make this happen, but that there had to have been an idea. What gave you the idea? How did it get started?
Yeah. I mean, I first learned about like cooperatives, like back in college. It definitely like hit me at the time that like, oh, this is the way to make sure that like art gets supported, and not just art getting supported, but the art that artists want to make gets supported. Right.
Yeah.
Then it sat on the back burner for several years, but like always kind of in the back of my mind. And I was always looking for, ways to be involved in the community, like teaching classes and workshops, making zines, being involved with cool things and local orgs or whatever. And, it's really hard being a local artist, right?
Yeah.
Most of the opportunities that you find are opportunities that you've made for yourself by, going up to people and being like, hey, I'm here and I want to do this thing. And one of the reasons I love Spokane is just how malleable it is as a city, because you can just go up to a local business owner and say, hey, I want to run a zine club or whatever. And that's one of the really magical things about Spokane. So that's doing a lot of that work is sort of how I made most of the connections with, you know, other artists and cool people in the community that have eventually come together to make Splat. Back in June of last year, Luke Baumgarten of Range. I always
He and Aaron do.
Luke Baumgarten of Range was posting on Blue Sky about cooperatives, and I was like, "Hey, I've kind of wanted to make a cooperative happen. Could I pick your brain sometime?" And he was nice enough to say yes. And then we started talking about it. I gave him sort of the rough pitch of like a zine based print shop that runs classes and whatnot. And he was like, yeah, well, that sounds really good. I think you should do it. The main thing you need is a place to do it. I was like, great. I have no money, and rent's a lot of money that I don't have. So that's just not going to happen. Then in sort of through the summer, I was also with my friend Nadia Hitchcock running a figure drawing class at the Blue Door Theater, the community pop-up figure drawing, class, and towards the end of us running that, we weren't really able to keep it sustainable through the winter. Just, you know, life got in the way. It was cold. Yeah. Everyone was going back to school. So, like, attendance was down. But towards the end of that, the crepe shop that was in the front of the Blue Door Theater had just closed. And I was one of the first people to go into the theater and realize that that had happened. And so I emailed Jim, is like, hey, I have a crazy idea. I just need free rent, basically. and Jim was amazing and trusted me with my crazy idea. Yeah, and that was like October. And
yeah, Jim Moore, executive director.
Yeah, I've had him on the show too.
Yeah, Jim Moore at Blue Door Theater. Yeah. He's wonderful. Hi, Jim. And we worked out a deal. I signed a lease with him. And then from there, it was just a matter of like putting this thing together and making it happen. And then over New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, we got a bunch of people to come together and paint the space. And then over the rest of January, we started moving into the space and getting people to drop off their stuff to sell with us. And then on the 31st, we opened, and now we've been open for a week. So, yeah, that's how it happened.
Well, and now you had a grand opening, too. How was that? What was that like?
Pleasantly packed the entire day.
Wow. Fantastic.
Yeah, so much better than either of us could have hoped or expected.
Yeah.
So many amazing people from the community came to, you know, check out the space, hang out, and, you know, actually support local artists, you know, directly. And, you know, we had live music and zine making, you know, also hosted and performed by people who are involved with Splat. You know, the thing about artists is that we're all very skilled people in like a variety of skills beyond just, you know, making marks on a page, right? Yeah. Like, you know, that's the thing that we love doing. But in order to like make that thing that we love doing sustainable, we have to develop all these other skills alongside it, like web design or, you know, educational skills or, you know, manufacturing and building stuff skills.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many like skill sets that come with being a working artist that tend to get overlooked and underestimated.
Well,
and
there's so many things to be a successful artist. I think you have to like take off that artist hat, and now I'm the bookkeeper, and you mm-hmm. put on your bookkeeper app. Now I'm the PR person. I'm this. I'm scheduling you to go do this thing, and I'm out there asking to get in these galleries. Unfortunately for me, I get too wrapped around mm-hmm. the creation stuff, and I just totally. Don't like to do any of the other stuff, you know?
Totally.
So, yeah, and I think that's not uncommon either.
I think a lot of us also have sort of our, like, pet skill sets that we really like to do. Like, like, I'm a big nerd about printing, and I also really like teaching and running events, right? I am terrible at numbers, you know,
yeah.
And paperwork and contracts and such make me want to break down and cry.
Do you teach art? What do you teach?
Yeah, I'm a high school teacher at, I'm a community contributor at the community school.
Oh, nice.
So
okay.
I teach high school students art.
Yeah.
And currently we are doing a zine class, and it's super cool.
Yay.
And I've taught with like a whole bunch of other places in the past as well, but that's currently my main gig. And they are lovely students and yeah, great people to work
with. Good people there.
But yeah, no, like I have the areas of being a working artist that I really like doing. And then the areas of being a working artist that like I hate having to deal with social media. Right.
Yeah.
But one of the nice things about sort of getting all these wonderful, super skilled people under one roof to work together towards a common goal is that we can all kind of pick and choose the work that we are most passionate about. And really make sure that we are all not just supporting ourselves, but supporting each other, right? Like I love printing, but like in order to really take care of a printer, you should run it like every day, right?
Yeah.
And frankly, I could not make enough art, even if I sat down and just made art all day, every day to make it worth to print my own art every day.
Do you mostly like to do, graphic design on the computer, then is that your
I do like illustration and like comics and digital painting primarily.
Yeah, okay.
Graphic design is a wonderful skill set that is not really
okay.
My wheelhouse.
Do you do Procreate? What's your favorite go-to for digital painting?
Yeah, my main software that I use is Clip Studio Paint.
Okay.
And I've been using it since I was a teenager, and it's been really good to use since I was a teenager. I have some complaints about their current business model, but it's okay. I have an old version with a permanent license, so
yeah.
It's fine. you know, but that's sort of my main software that I work in. But like the point being, you know, I, you know, had this resource of these printers and whatnot, and I, you know, love using them and really know my way around them. But you know, there's only so much that I could print on my own, right?
Yeah.
And so bringing them into the space and making sure that it's a community resource makes it so that they can really be used properly to everyone's benefit, not just my own benefit, and used to their fullest potential as well, right?
Well, it's like at the heart of a co-op kind of thing right there, that kind of attitude.
Yeah, totally. And like there's so much other work involved with being an artist that is like that. You know, being a working artist involves building infrastructure. And I think where people really struggle is they build that infrastructure and they can only really use it to help themselves, right? Part of what we're doing with Splat is making sure that we are building that infrastructure to support each other.
It really has been such a community effort. A lot of work has gone into getting Splat open and running and functional. But it hasn't seemed like, I mean, we've all worked really hard, but it hasn't seemed like the insurmountable thing that we thought it might be.
Yeah.
Because everybody has shared the load and done a really fantastic job of it.
And like, it's not just that everyone shared the load. Everyone shared the load by doing the work that they are most excited and passionate about doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the thing that's really the key, I think, to like our future sustainability is like making sure that the people that we work with are doing the work that they care about.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and you've got Alana, you do on the social media end of things. I feel like you're very responsive and you're putting stuff up all the time. And I think like,
I have my on days and off days.
Okay. Maybe I'll catch you on the good days, but I feel like, you know, it's a really, you're doing a really good job of keeping the name out there and then also making it seem interesting and fun, which is an art in itself, I feel like.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the praise. Social media is not my favorite thing to do, but I can do it.
Yeah.
Thankfully, we have some people in our community who are excited to step up and really take charge on that side of things. So
yeah, I'm just filling in.
So if you like our post now, just wait until
good.
The posts start getting made by someone who likes making posts.
Okay. Must be the actor in you that you can do that.
It's, I guess. I taught myself to do it when I was, with Stage Left, and before that with the advocacy organization I ran in the lighting industry.
Yeah. How's that going? Because you've been, a lot of people don't know, but you programmed the New Year's Eve drop fall, right? I mean, yes. that's a big thing that you've done, and you run that social media thing. And so how's that? I mean, the nonprofit for that, how's that going?
Yeah, it's in a state of transition. I haven't really done much work in the architectural world with the exception of one recent project. So I'm easing my way out the door.
So you're not lighting any more shows?
Oh, no. I'm absolutely still lighting.
Okay.
But I'm lighting more for theater. And that organization was geared more toward the architecture world.
Oh, okay.
There are other organizations and kind of less urgent need for it in the theatrical world. So I'm still designing shows.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you got any ones coming up?
Or? Yeah, I do. So I've got Squalor in April with Susan Hardy at Civic. And then we're going to remount Minister of Sorrow for a one-day, two-performance deal at SFCC. Those are both in April. And then I'll be doing the season at Coeur d'Alene Summer Theater.
Wow. Busy, busy, busy.
Yeah. Soon.
Yeah.
Right now. Yeah. Right now it's all splat all the time.
Yeah. And yeah. And when you, so I take it probably zine making, is that probably your favorite medium to kind of do, your favorite outlet?
Yeah, I'd say so. Zines and comics specifically are sort of my two favorite mediums.
Yeah.
I like doing illustration and like digital art type stuff as well. I mean, digital art is more just sort of a means to the ends of the art making. You could do it with whatever art you want, but like I like doing illustration. I like doing comics. I like doing zines. I'm one of the editors of Spokane Sequential. And then the other side of things that I love doing is I love running events and classes and just sort of working to build community and helping people get together and do stuff that they're proud of, you know? It's like the most fulfilling thing about what I do isn't so much the art making of it all, but it's the, you know, doing it and saying, hey, you can do this too. And then encouraging others around me to also start doing art making or continue doing art making or to take a big step in their process and development as artists and whatnot. And, there's really nothing better than that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's really cool. You're very much helping out people so much. I was at the Trans Day of Remembrance in Coeur d'Alene, and Sarah and I were sitting around a table, and that was one where they fed you. So there was like, it's really nice, good food.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it was really good. So we were eating, and the folks that we were sitting around the table with started talking about AI. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the one person was really like, well, AI is not going to be that bad. And other people didn't really know. But, you know, it kind of dawned on me in this conversation where we were sitting there eating food together and enjoying this programming, I think. And what an opportunity to reconnect, to kind of rediscover our humanity, I feel like, with AI, this burgeoning AI, to do real things like theater. I mean, that's what I say about theater. It's like, well, you can go see a movie and you don't even know if those people are real anymore on the screen. But same thing with AI art, right? But I mean, like, when you are making a zine, when you're out there drawing things with your own hand or comic or, you know, doing a linoleum cut print or whatever. I mean, that's like, to me, it seems like it's a really cool thing to reassert yourself as a human to do these things.
Yeah.
You kind of feel like more of a calling to because of that? Or
absolutely. I mean, I think every working artist or anyone who cares about art and people's creativity at all can recognize that AI is not just a threat to the economy and society, like, oh, it's going to be a rogue robot and it's going to nuke things. But it's a threat to culture. It's a threat to humanity, right? You get people who start heavily using AI and they just start to lose parts of themselves as a result. And it starts with something simple like, oh, I'll let the AI chatbot finish my email for me. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes, oh, I'll let it write this essay. And oh, I'll let it do this research for me. And each time you opt to let AI do something for you, you are opting into not being a human anymore.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a bad thing, right? And right. I think now than more than ever, it's really important to make sure that we are supporting the artists and creative people in our lives who help us reconnect with our humanity, who help us feel things again, right? Like, we are living in very horrific times, right?
Yeah.
And the only way out is through, and the only way we're going to get through it is together. And in order to get through it together, we need to care about each other. And in order to care about each other, we need to have empathy. And in order to have empathy, you need to engage with other people honestly. And part of what art does is it helps us do that, right? Mm-hmm. Art is foundational to saving ourselves.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and not only that, if we're using AI, we are serving our billionaire overlords.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just feeding that machine, and that machine is it's producing what they, I mean, not this it's not tinfoil hat, it's absolutely what it is. It produces what they want it to produce.
Yeah.
So it's always going to be, whatever comes out of it is going to be through the filter of the billionaire ruling class.
Yeah. If you tell a generative model to make hands, it will make a white woman's hands, mm-hmm. right? And it does that because the data that it's been fed to understand what hands are is predominantly the hands of white women, right? Yeah.
And if it shows a couple in love, 100 times out of 100, it's going to be a man and a woman.
Yeah, it is, you know.
Cis man and a cis woman.
It is, AI is representative of not just dominant culture, but domineering culture. It is creating a, people assume that because it's a robot, it's something that's factual and objective, that the thing that it spits out is factual and objective, and that those things are normal, right?
Yeah.
And that's not true, right?
Right.
The people are so much more diverse and interesting than that, right?
Well, and yes, I totally agree in both of you. That's said it so much better than I could have ever said it. But I also think that there's something as an artist that when you are creating something, whether it's a lighting job or whether it's graphic art on a computer or a paintbrush or whatever, that there is this conversation that you have with your medium, mm-hmm. and that you keep evolving, that you keep changing, and there's something about eventually you come to this I'm trying to struggle with words a little bit here, but you're on an equilibrium with what you've created, mm-hmm. and you, in your mind, you say, that's it. That's what I wanted. And that may be, for me, when I'm painting, it's like, but my canvas is so thick by the time I'm done, because that's not it yet, mm-hmm. you know, and until it is it. And I think that there's something that happens inside your brain that makes you a creative person, maybe creates empathy too, mm-hmm. that is so human that we are going to lose by people saying, I watched the commercials at the Super Bowl, and it was, to me, it was so disturbing that people at their jobs were now, they would say, oh, you're freed up. I just asked the computer to do all this, and now you're free. You know, have the rest of the day off. Mm-hmm. So I don't think
that's
gonna,
what actually happens.
Yeah, it's going to have the rest of your life off.
Yeah.
And by the way, what are you going to do? What are you going to do with your life? Because all the good things that are worth doing, like art, things like that, are now taken away. Where, you know, nobody values those anymore.
Right. Well, it doesn't even work that way either. It's not like you're going to get an extra day off.
No, you're just going to not have a job.
You're either not going to have a job or you're just going to be expected to keep producing more and more and more.
Yeah.
To drive up productivity, to drive up profit margins. It benefits somebody, but it sure as hell isn't you.
No, it's not. And it's and again, you know, I think as Americans, we get into this mindset of productivity. And boy, we should all be proud because our productivity is so high. I don't know if any other country does that or cares about that. They care about happiness and education and standard of living and also quality of life as you age. All those things that, you know, I mean, we're not the bottom line, mm-hmm. you know. And I, you know, as much as I tell you, I would have never wished this time upon anybody that we're going through in the United States right now. But this is a great time to reassert and to raise the banner of humanity. And I think that making art is one of the ways to do it.
Yeah, I have never felt more connected to the people in my life, everyone in my life, than I do right now. Because we have to be, right? Yeah. And, you know, art making is not just some elite skill set for, you know, people who went to art school or whatever. You know, it's not just for people who have the fancy computers. Art is a fundamental part of being a human.
Yeah.
And everyone, including you, listener, Tom.
Tom.
You can make art. And I know you're going to say, oh, I can't even draw a stick figure, but you can start by drawing a line. Mm-hmm. You know, you can draw a circle. You don't have to draw anything. You just have to put a pen to paper and let yourself explore and play, right? Like, this is a part of being human that so many of us have cut ourselves off from because it's like, oh, I'll never get a job doing that. Or, oh, you can't make money as an artist, you know?
Like, everybody thinks they have to be good at it.
Right.
And you don't have to be quote unquote good at it. You have to enjoy it. You have to get something. You have to feel from it.
Yeah.
And if you put aside the societal expectation that you have to be successful at it, monetize it, you can actually enjoy it.
Yeah. The thing I'm always telling my students is that the most important thing about learning to draw is learning how you like to draw, right?
Oh, I love that.
Because if you don't like doing it, you're not going to do it, right? But it's something that we should all like doing because it's something that helps us know ourselves better. It helps us assert ourselves in the world better. It helps us make connections with people better. It is fundamental to community building. It is fundamental to figuring out who you are as a person, right? Like before I realized I was trans, I drew myself as a girl, right? And I was like, oh, this is just kind of a fun thing to do, right? And eventually I put two and two together, but get those dominoes don't start falling unless you let yourself start exploring and playing, right?
Right.
And it goes for every aspect of yourself.
Yep. And you know, I think during these times, and we got to split here, but,
oh, absolutely.
But, I know the listeners probably get tired of me saying this, but I always feel like if you are really sick and tired of the destruction in front of you, you can hate the destroyers. That's all well and good. But you know what really gets them is when you create.
Mm-hmm.
Creation mm-hmm. is the opposite of destruction.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think that's what's driving them so mad right now is, in the midst of all this chaos, communities are forming.
Oh, the creativity of the demonstrators are amazing. Mm-hmm. And that they cannot figure it out. And that's why they always say, it's paid protesters and people making this. They're paying for this. Like, because they don't understand.
Can't fathom it.
They can't fathom that people would be honorable. They're so dishonorable that honor does not make any sense to them mm-hmm. whatsoever.
Yeah.
Okay, let's tell people one more time where Splat is, and then we got to go.
Okay, it's at 319 South Cedar Street, just off of 3rd Avenue in downtown Spokane.
It's in a giant milk bottle.
In a giant milk bottle.
You can't miss it.
So you can find us at splatspokane.org or on Instagram at splat_co-op and bluesky at splatspokane.org.
All right.
And we are open Thursday through Sunday, 2 to 9 p.m.
Fantastic. Thank you for being here. And
thank you, so thank you for having
yeah,
us.
Yeah, all right. You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane. And I will talk to you next week.
Bye.
Yes. And we Americans are presently getting a noxious blast of that stench from our warmongering Department of Defense. The vast trillion-dollar Pentagon is the ultimate Big Brother bureaucracy, literally empowered to compel thousands of Americans to die in foolish military misadventures cooked up by political partisans and profiteering corporate contractors. That's why it's so alarming that Trump's Project 2025 autocrats are now rushing to slam an iron door of censorship on reporters trying to inform us commoners about the militaristic schemes and corporate fraud that comes from inside this government fortress. In the name of defending freedom, Trump's palace guards are banning media outlets that displease His Royal Highness. Also, Pretty Boy Pete, Trump's made-for-TV Pentagon honcho, has even decreed that reporters must be tightly monitored by military escorts while doing interviews, reviewing documents, and otherwise exercising the essential constitutional rights of our nation's free press. The good news is that rather than kowtowing to the autocrats, dozens of media organizations have told Pete to stuff it, choosing to do old-school outsider digging into this insider war machine. This is Jim Hightower saying, meanwhile, the Project 2025 authoritarians hail their clampdown on free press rights by touting their, quote, fresh relationship with what they call their new Pentagon press corps. Right, it's their partisan press corps, not ours. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM.
KYRS Medical Lake and K222BG Dartford, 88.1 FM and 92.3 FM, Thin Air Community Radio. The following program was pre-recorded.
This is Democracy Now!
Have you ever facilitated the sexual abuse of any minor or adult woman by Mr. Epstein?
I invoke my Fifth Amendment right to silence.
As global fallout continues to grow over the Jeffrey Epstein files, his co-conspirator, Ghislaine Maxwell, refused to answer questions during a closed-door virtual deposition before the House Oversight Committee. She says if Trump grants her clemency, she will exonerate him. We'll go to London, where British Prime Minister Keir Starmer is facing calls to resign for appointing Peter Mandelson to be U.S. ambassador, despite his ties to Epstein. Then to the children of Dili.
Hello, my name is Ariana V. I'm 14 years old, and I'm from Mongolia.